Hello everyone and happy holidays! I'm Megan Sullivan and welcome to my History in Games holiday special, 12 facts about Hercules and his 12 labors in 12 minutes. So, I wanted to do something fun for the holidays and I thought about 12 days of Christmas, and for some reason that led me to think about the 12 labors of Hercules, and I thought, why not? Besides, this gives me a chance to wax poetic about a sweet little PC game I really enjoy, and I think you guys will too. It's called 12 Labors of Hercules. So, if you're listening at home or in transit, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fun little audio podcast. And if you're watching the video version on YouTube at History in Games, one word, I hope you like what you're watching and check the game out for yourself. Before I get started, though, I just want to say thank you so much for supporting History in Games this year. 2023 was an important milestone for the podcast. First of all, it was a really good year for guests. I was lucky and honored to have wonderful guests come on my podcast this year, including author Barry Strauss, historian and author Professor Sarah Iles Johnston, developer Sarah Carmichael, author Dr. Kira Jones, head of the Ozymandias Project Lexi Henning, author and professor Josiah Ober, and author MJ Gallagher. This year, I also published some of my most popular content to date, including my episodes on Hades 2, Hades, God of War, and Tears of the Kingdom. But I couldn't have gotten this far without your support. And I mean that, it's not an empty platitude. So again, thank you for being a part of this journey. And of course, the goal for 2024 is to do even more game developer interviews, more author and historian interviews, and more collaborations. And the biggest goal of all is to finally reveal my big giant History in Games project that I've been working on for over a year now. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. In the meantime, if you have any requests or questions or comments, feel free to email me at meghistory@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Also, if you enjoy History and Games, please, please consider supporting me on Patreon at Megan, M-E-G-H-A-N-R, Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now, on to the main event. So, if you're watching the History in Games YouTube channel, then you can already see I'm playing 12 Labors of Hercules by Jet Dog Studios on my computer. This is a fun and addictive time management game, where the player accompanies Hercules on his quest to save his wife Megara from the god Hades, who has kidnapped her and taken her to the underworld. In order to rescue Megara, the player must point and click the screen to clear roads, build structures, and recruit helpers to get to Hades faster. What's hilarious about this game is Hercules barely lifts a finger. He mostly just chills in a hammock while his servants do most of the work. You know, chopping wood, smashing rocks, gathering food for energy, repairing bridges, etc., etc. All of which takes time, so it's important for the player to decide the order in which they do all of these activities so the servants can quickly complete levels before time runs out. Just to be clear, by the way, Hercules does occasionally lift boulders out of the way, but that's usually about it. This game is just so cute and fun, and I definitely recommend playing it, especially since it's available right now on Steam for just $3. And no, this is not a paid promotion. Now, to be fair, the title of this game is kind of a misnomer. It doesn't really have anything to do with the 12 labors of Hercules. It's just Hercules and his servants bouncing between different areas, clearing rocks and debris, which I guess kind of counts as laborious. I mean, you have to clear different areas by doing work. And you can recruit a Hydra and Cerberus, also known as Cerberus, to help you on your journey, and they're both part of the 12 Labors of Hercules, so there's that. Oh, and the story does sort of echo the events found in Euripides' play Alcestis, in which Hercules manages to bring the dead Alcestis back from the underworld after she agrees to die in her husband's place. So the game sort of reflects myths about Hercules, but let's be honest, it's really just a game about having fun. Okay, so at this point you might be thinking, remind me what the 12 labors of Hercules are? Well, in canonical order, they are the slaying of the Nemean lion, the slaying of the nine-headed Hydra of Lerna, capturing the Carinaean hind, capturing the Erymanthian boar, cleaning the Augean stables, slaying the Stymphalian birds, capturing the Cretan bull, stealing the mares of Diomedes, obtaining the girdle of Hippolyta, queen of the Amazons, obtaining the cattle of the three-bodied giant Geryon, stealing three of the golden apples of the Hesperides, and finally capturing and bringing back Cerberus or Cerberus, the three-headed guard dog of the underworld. And I apologize, some of these names are tongue twisters, so hopefully I didn't mess them up too bad. Now, in addition to these labors, Hercules was said to have many, 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 many other adventures, which took him from Greece to Italy, to Spain, to North Africa, and even to the Caucasus. These side quests include accompanying Jason on his mission to obtain the Golden Fleece, saving a Trojan princess from a sea monster, fighting giants, getting into a fight with Apollo, fighting a Spartan king, serving a Lydian queen, and much, much more. But why did he have to go on all these adventures in the first place? Well, it was sort of his destiny. Now, we don't have time to go into all the details of this very long story, but here's a basic overview of the adventures of Hercules. Or I guess I should say Heracles, his actual Greek name. Hercules, you see, is the Latin name. According to the 8th century BCE poet Hesiod, in his work The Shield of Heracles, the king of the god Zeus wants to produce a son that acts as a protector of gods and men alike. Instead of choosing Hera, his wife and queen, to be the mother of that son, however, Zeus decides the mother should be the beautiful Alcmene, a mortal princess living with her husband, Prince Amphitryon, in the city of Thebes. Amphitryon himself is not actually from Thebes, but there's a whole crazy story behind that we don't have time to cover here. One day, while the warrior prince is away on campaign, Zeus comes down from Olympus disguised as Amphitryon and sleeps with an unsuspecting Alcmene, who immediately gets pregnant with Heracles. But eventually, this ruse is discovered by both Prince Amphitryon and Queen Hera, who is livid that her unfaithful husband has once again cheated on her. Since Hera isn't allowed to take her rage out on the king of the gods, however, she turns that wrath on Heracles instead, and does everything she can to destroy him. First, she tries delaying his birth, but that doesn't work. So then she sends a pair of serpents to kill the infant, but the super strong baby strangles the serpents before they can harm him. Then later, after Heracles is grown and married to Princess Megara of Thebes, Hera curses the strong man with a fit of madness, which causes him to murder his children, or in some versions of the story, his wife and children. It's to atone for this crime that Heracles goes to Mycenae to offer his services to his cousin and rival, King Eurystheus, who tasks him with 12 increasingly impossible labors, which Heracles manages to complete in 12 years, even after getting sidetracked several times in the course of his journey. Once Heracles finishes his labors, he successfully wrestles a river god for the hand of the beautiful Deianira, whom he also saves from the ravages of a centaur named Nessus by killing the centaur with arrows dipped in the poisonous venom of the Hydra he defeated as part of his second labor. Before he dies, Nessus tells Deianira that if she's ever worried Heracles might cheat on her, she should dip a cloak in Nessus's blood and give it to Heracles, and that the blood would act like a love charm, binding Heracles to his wife. Why Deianira believes Nessus is unclear, but when Heracles does indeed fall in love with another girl, his wife gives him the bloody cloak and too late realizes it's a trap. When Heracles puts on the cloak, he is instantly in terrible agony. The strong man is in such agony, in fact, that he throws himself on his own funeral pyre so that he can hasten his death and be out of pain. Instead of descending into Hades, however, Heracles' spirit ascends to Mount Olympus, where he is allowed to join the gods for all eternity. It's at this point the goddess Hera finally gives up her grudge against her stepson and even offers him her own daughter, Hebe or Hebe, meaning youth, as his eternal bride. And they all lived happily ever after. And that's the short version of the story. And it's a pretty fun fantasy adventure. But this brings up an interesting question. Who is Heracles, really? Where does the story of Heracles and his 12 labors come from? Does it teach us anything about ancient times? The answer is yes, and that's why I wanted to do an episode called 12 Facts About Heracles and His 12 Labors in 12 Minutes. And we're going to start the clock now. Fact number one. His name wasn't originally Heracles. According to the myth, when Heracles was born, his mother Alcmene first called him either Palaemon, which means the wrestler, or Alcaeus or Alcides, a name suggesting strength. In other words, from the very beginning, Heracles was associated with mighty strength. Now, he wouldn't be called Heracles until he started his 12 labors, which leads us right into the next interesting fact. Number 2. The name Heracles is made up of two words, Hera, meaning the goddess Hera, and Kleos, which means glory, fame, renown. In other words, the name Heracles means Hera's glory, or the glory of Hera. Now, on the surface, this makes no sense. Hera spends half of her time terrorizing Heracles. So why then is he named after her? Well, there are two theories for this. The first is that since Hera is the one who sets in motion all the events that lead to his famous adventures, the strong man's glory is due to Hera. The other theory is that the name was a way of placating Hera. And this also makes sense because in ancient Greece, the Greeks would try to propitiate hostile deities by calling them flattering names. The Furies, for example, were often addressed as the kindly ones in the hopes of averting their fury. Thus, Heracles might have changed his name as a way of appeasing a wrathful Hera by making it sound like he was grateful for the fame Hera offered him through his labors. Either way, Heracles is definitely linked to Hera and has been so for a long time, which brings us to fact number 3. Heracles' story has very ancient roots. How ancient? According to author Walter Burkett, the strongman story may begin in the Upper Paleolithic era, which is just a fancy way of saying the Stone Age. Before the advent of agriculture and animal husbandry, humans were primarily hunter-gatherers, and this is reflected in early human cave art, which often shows animals and/or hunting scenes. And what's so intriguing about Heracles is that almost all of his labors have something to do with hunting or herding or taming animals. Whether he's slaying dangerous predators like lions and serpents, hunting edible animals like deer, birds, and boar, or taming and herding animals like horses, cattle, and hounds, he even gathers apples like a good hunter-gatherer. You can even argue he quote-unquote tames, or at least neutralizes the threat of, wild women known as Amazons. In other words, he's the ultimate archetype of a successful Paleolithic hero. He protects civilized humans from wild animals and provides the community with the food and pelts they need to survive during the last ice age, which just happened to take place during the Upper Paleolithic era. So, that explains the very earliest origins of Heracles. But what about his 12 labors involving fantastic creatures that don't even exist in nature, like a multi-headed snake or a super lion? What inspired those stories? Well, that brings us to number 4 on our list of interesting facts about Heracles. Although the idea of a superhero huntsman may have started in the Stone Age, the story of Heracles properly begins in the Bronze Age, which lasted from about 3300 BCE until around 1177 BCE. One of the earliest Bronze Age cultures belonged to the Sumerians, who lived in Mesopotamia around modern-day Iraq. The Sumerians were a heavily agricultural society, and one of their most venerated gods was a god of war and agriculture, Ninurta. Ninurta was the powerful son of the storm god and king of the gods Enlil, and he was best known for his epic adventures, in which he conquered many fantastic monsters. These monsters include a mermaid, an entity known as the Palm King, a six-headed ram, wild bulls, a seven-headed snake, and a powerful amalgam of a lion and an eagle. These monsters are referred to as the trophies of Ninurta, and you can sense the similarities between these labors and those of Heracles, particularly the story involving the battle between Ninurta and a multi-headed snake. By the way, some of Ninurta's deeds were later associated with other Mesopotamian gods, like Marduk of Babylon, his son Nabu, as well as Nergal, lord of the underworld, who was also later associated with Heracles. So it's likely that Heracles' labors are inspired by these earlier Sumerian tales. But Ninurta's adventures isn't the only possible Sumerian story Heracles is based on, which brings us to number 5 on our list. Heracles' story might also be inspired by the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was first written down as far back as 2100 BCE. The epic recounts the extraordinary adventures of Gilgamesh, a historical king who ruled over the city of Uruk in ancient Mesopotamia around 2750 BCE. He must have been an extraordinary king, and legends about him probably sprang up not long after his death. These stories were turned into five major adventures: Gilgamesh in Aga, Gilgamesh in Huwawa, Gilgamesh in the Bowl of Heaven, Gilgamesh in the Underworld, and the Death of Gilgamesh. 1,000 years later, these stories served as the inspiration for the first official Epic of Gilgamesh, written down in Old Babylonian around 1700 BCE. Then around 1200 BCE, a scholar priest named Sinlekwe Unini, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, created the standard version we know today. And here's the short version of it. Long ago, King Gilgamesh ruled over the Mesopotamian city of Uruk, but he was an arrogant ruler and nobody liked him. The gods felt sorry for the people of Uruk and decided to create a wild man who was strong and brave enough to take on Gilgamesh in a fight. After Enkidu's creation, he was then tamed by the erotic arts of a temple priestess and taken to Uruk, where he challenged Gilgamesh to a fight. Gilgamesh eventually won the fight, but rather than kill his opponent, offered to become friends with him. And according to one version of the story, they were way more than just friends. At any rate, after they became besties, Gilgamesh and Enkidu went monster hunting. But this resulted in Enkidu dying of an illness as punishment for first killing a sacred being to the gods and then killing the heavenly bull, which the goddess Inanna, also known as Ishtar, sent after the king after he rejected her offer of marriage. Gilgamesh was so upset and rattled by his friend's death that he sought out Utnapishtim, the only man to have obtained immortality. This required a long and dangerous journey, and in order to survive it, Gilgamesh fed himself by hunting several dangerous animals, including lions and deer, and wrapping himself in the pelt of a lion. He finally made it to Utnapishtim, who hinted that immortality might not be in the king's future. But hey, he's a king who's had an amazing life and incredible adventures, so that's something, right? But of course, that's not what Gilgamesh wanted to hear. So after recounting how he was granted immortality, which involves a very familiar flood story, Utnapishtim told the king if he managed to stave off sleep for 7 days, seven being a very sacred number to the Mesopotamians, then perhaps Gilgamesh could stave off a more permanent type of sleep, i.e. death. Unfortunately, Gilgamesh was so exhausted from his travels, he immediately fell asleep and was pretty upset when he woke up. At this point, Utnapishtim offered to have his boatman, Ur-Shanabi, escort Gilgamesh back home, and even offered a consolation prize of sorts by telling Gilgamesh about a youth-restoring plant under the ocean, which would buy the king some time and abate his fear of death. And so, Gilgamesh started off for home. But unbelievably, during the journey, a snake ate the plant, and Gilgamesh burst into despondent tears. I knew I would. I mean, the poor man just had the worst luck. But by the time Gilgamesh arrived home, he had taken Utnapishtim's words to heart. The most important thing was to live a good life. And so the epic ends with Gilgamesh extolling the virtues of his amazing city. It's a heck of a story, and you can definitely see similarities between Gilgamesh and Heracles. They both take on a bull, they both get in trouble with a goddess, they both wear a lion skin, and they both have a companion on their adventures. In Heracles' case, he has his nephew Aeolus, who actually accompanies him on his second labor to defeat the Hydra. Unfortunately, Eurystheus thinks that Aeolus helping Heracles is cheating and that the rest of the labors have to be done alone. So Aeolus gets left at the wayside, but nobody said Heracles had to complete his side quests alone, which brings us to number 6 on the list. Heracles was the first Greek to sack Troy. Yes, long before Achilles and Odysseus show up to fight the Trojans, Heracles had already done some damage to the famed walled city after getting sidetracked during one of his labors. According to Homer and other subsequent authors, Heracles agrees to save the Trojan king's daughter Hesione from a sea monster sent to punish King Laomedon for renegating on a promise to honor Poseidon and Apollo for helping him build Troy's famous walls. In exchange for vanquishing the sea monster, monster, Heracles wanted King Laomedon to give him a herd of immortal horses being kept at Troy. The king agreed, and Heracles saves his daughter, but then Laomedon renegades on this promise too, because apparently he just lacks the ability to learn, and so Heracles gathers a crew of legendary Greek heroes and sacks Troy as punishment. Ironically, one young Trojan prince will be spared, and he will go on to be King Priam. And now you know the rest of the story. But yes, Heracles sacked Troy first, and one of his companions during this expedition was Iphicles, which brings us to fact number 7. Heracles was in fact a twin. This is often overlooked in modern times, but the ancient Greeks reported this fact as far back as Hesiod. While Heracles was the son of Alcmene and Zeus, Iphicles was the son of Alcmene and her husband Amphitryon. He was born the night after Heracles, and like Heracles, he grew up to be very strong, but obviously not as strong as his more famous brother. Now, Hesiod doesn't seem all that impressed with this inferior brother in the Shield of Heracles, but other traditions are a bit more favorable. Iphicles is said to have accompanied his twin on a few adventures, including an expedition to Troy, the Caledonian boar hunt, and another expedition to Sparta where he was killed in battle. Although there's another account of Iphicles dying in a different battle, but whatever. The point is, Iphicles apparently got along with this famous twin, which is amazing considering that two of his sons were murdered by Heracles in a fit of madness. I guess brotherly bonds cannot easily be broken. They're twins, after all, born within a day of each other. Speaking of birth, that leads us to number 8 on our list, which is Heracles' birth provides an interesting insight into practices used by ancient obstetricians, aka midwives. The story goes that while his mother was in labor, Hera ordered the goddess of childbirth, Alethea, to delay Heracles' birth. Now, even today, birth complications can be extremely dangerous for the mother and child, and so this was doubly dangerous back in ancient times. Lucky for Alcmene and her twins, the midwife Galanthus knew something was wrong and figured out that the goddess of childbirth must be obstructing the labor process. To trick Alethea into letting go of her spell, the maid shouted loudly with joy that a baby had just been born. Startled and confused, the goddess, sitting cross-legged with her hands clasped, let go of her spell just long enough for Alcmene to actually give birth. Furious a mortal had broken her spell, Alethea turned the midwife into a weasel and stormed off. Now, if you're wondering why a weasel, this might be in faint remembrance of Alethea's Bronze Age cult. You see, Alethea was worshipped by the Mycenaeans and possibly by the Minoans, a pre-Greek people famous for their sophisticated palace culture on the island of Crete. The ancient Minoans and Mycenaeans associated weasels with the cult of their birth goddess because it was thought that either weasels gave birth really easily, or something about the bodily fluid of female weasels when consumed could help women in labor. And there may be some science to support this. At any rate, it's thanks to this story of Heracles' birth that we actually know a bit more about the ancient beliefs of midwives. Speaking of children, that leads us to number 9 on our list. Heracles fathered over 90 children. Heracles was known for his enormous appetites, and that doesn't just mean food. He had a thing for the ladies. This belief in all these children may stem from the fact that various ruling dynasties around the Greek world wanted some type of heroic divine blood to justify their rule. And since Heracles was the ultimate wandering hero, it was easy to claim that he had dropped by a particular area and fathered a lot of children who would go on to found different dynasties. A good historic example of this is when the Dorian tribes of northern Greece invaded the Peloponnese in southern Greece in the early Iron Age. They claimed they had the divine right to rule the Peloponnese because they weren't really outsiders. They were in fact descendants of Heracles, returning to the land that made Heracles famous. The Spartan kings especially liked to tout this fact, except for one rather eclectic king who claimed his lineage was tied directly to the Achaeans, as in the heroes who fought at Troy. But that's a different story for a different day. Number 10. We have Heracles to thank for the Milky Way? According to one charming story, Alcmene was terrified of Hera's wrath. She knew the goddess hated her son and wanted none of the drama the baby came with. Thus, she refused to suckle Heracles, and she and her husband Amphitryon ordered the baby to be taken outside of the city of Thebes and left to die on a nearby plain. However, Athena rescues the infant and, according to one version of the story, places the baby on Hera's chest while the goddess is sleeping. Heracles happily nurses, but at one point the little glutton bites her nipple too hard and Hera wakes up with a cry, spraying her milk across the heavens, giving us the Milky Way. Some people credit Hera's milk as a source of Heracles' remarkable strength, by the way. So he got his strength from a woman. And believe it or not, that wasn't the only strong, powerful woman Heracles had to deal with. Which brings us to number 11 on our list. The Amazon Hippolyta was real. Okay, maybe not Hippolyta specifically, but the Amazons were based on real-life female warriors who lived on the steppes of Eurasia. Evidence for these femme fatales has been found in graves that span from around the Black Sea to northwest China. The sight of these wonder women must have blown the minds of male Greek travelers who recounted what they saw to their heavily misogynistic bros back home. But it wasn't just the Greeks who ran into these powerful female figures. As reported by Herodotus, Cyrus the Great, founder of the Persian Empire, fell in battle to a warrior queen named Tomiris, who apparently used his skull as a drinking cup. So yeah, Amazons could be scary, but they were powerful and real and commanded respect even among the Greeks. And finally, number 12, Heracles was one of the few heroes of Greek legend worshipped both as a hero and as a god. Now, normally demigods were still mortal, and when they died, people built a haroon, a special tomb for them where they offered prayers to the hero in the hopes the hero would benefit the community or at least not take their anger out in the community. But it was thought that their shades, their spirits, dwelled in the underworld. But Heracles achieved apotheosis, godhood, and ascended to Mount Olympus. So although he was given some chthonic rites, he was also worshipped as a god, and no tomb of Heracles was ever identified because the Greeks believed he was on Mount Olympus. And there it is, 12 facts about Heracles and his 12 labors in 12 minutes. Okay, it took a little longer than 12 minutes, but I just couldn't edit down these facts, you guys, they're just so interesting. So did you enjoy this episode? Learn anything new? Feel free to leave a comment in the comments below. Happy holidays, everyone!